Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Matt Pauley is out this evening. He'll be back tomorrow when the Cardinals resume the Major League season against Arizona with the opener of a three-game series and a six-game road trip to begin the second half. Nate Gatter with you in his stead. Pleased to be joined now by Camo X Golf correspondent Dan Reardon. We visited with Dan yesterday to talk about the Open Championship. We've now had 18 of the 72 holes to be played this weekend at Royal Portrush, and Dan is going to give us the lay of the land after those 18 holes. Dan, thanks so much for being with us again. Night two in a row.
Well, I'll say the same thing. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we are very, very happy to have you. Kind of an interesting first round. The weather generally not as problematic as I think people sometimes fear with Open Championships. Pretty good scores. I think it was 30 players who wound up shooting under par, something in that neighborhood. And they have a five-way tie at the top of the leaderboard, four under par. Let's start there before we get to Scheffler, one shot back, McIlroy and Rahm, three shots back, DeChambeau with a disappointing showing. Let's start with the five names who are at the top, none of them household names. Who stands out to you as more likely than the others to be among the leaders all the way through the championship?
Well, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the show that these are not household names. And what struck me about this is, this is the third consecutive major. It was true at the PGA Championship. It was true at the U.S. Open. And now it's true at the Open Championship. That the first day leaderboard is not cluttered with recognizable names at the top. The reason for that, I can't give you. But they eventually sorted themselves out. And I was curious enough to go back and look at what the first round leaderboard at the Masters was. And that was star-studded. You know, I mean, that was Justin Rose, who was a runner-up, was right there at the top. Actually, Scottie Scheffler was not as high up on that list, but it, you know, the most anonymous name in the top 10, I think, on the first day at the Masters was Corey Conner. He's far from anonymous in terms of players. But when you talk about Ha-Tung Lee, or when you talk about Jakob Olsson and players of that sort, I mean, you really do have to search for that. And it would be natural, I think, and I've always been guilty of that, to say, okay, out of these five leaders, who's going to hold up over the four days? And then you throw away those unknowns. Well, we learned our lesson with J.J. Spahn. We can't throw them away in every case because every once in a while they stay around. So to answer your question, English has the pedigree to do this. He has the world ranking. Seven birdies will always catch your attention on any round. And then Fitzpatrick, even though he doesn't have the world ranking, what he does have is a major championship. He won at the Country Club, and he's playing in his championship, which is the Open Championship. And Fitzpatrick was the name that caught my attention this morning as he moved up the leaderboard. We knew the other guys were there. I was looking for somebody a little more legitimate, and Fitzpatrick was the name that I looked at.
So let's get to some of those big legitimate names. Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, pre-tournament favorite, of course, as he is in essentially every competition he enters. He is only one off the lead, a 3-under 68, and he did it hitting only three fairways. How afraid should the rest of the field be?
Well, there's two things I'll say in regard to that. One, Scheffler was asked that question twice. He was asked by NBC, and then he was asked in the interview room how he could play that well and miss all those fairways. And he was frankly offended at the question because he said, I drove the ball extremely well. He said, I don't know where the number comes from, but he says, he wasn't in the primary rough hardly at all.
Sure.
He was in that very short rough. So that statistic is a little bit misleading in saying that. But the other thing I'll say about Scheffler, I mentioned I looked at Fitzpatrick, and you asked me would I get up early this morning to take in this championship. Yeah, guilty as charged. Scheffler played, you know, they had a 90-minute window where they got severe weather. I mean, it was rain. It was coming down sideways. It was nasty. Scheffler played through all 90 minutes of that. And out of the players on the leaderboard, the top of the board, the only other one who played through that was Fitzpatrick, and he didn't play through as many holes as Scottie did. So I think that 3-under from Scheffler deserves a little more respect because of the circumstances where he had to hold up, and he was just hanging on. I think 7 through 13 was the stretch of holes, and he was really hanging on for dear life, getting as much out of the conditions as he possibly could. So I think he's even a little more dangerous going into tomorrow's round than you might think.
And sometimes they talk about with the American players that these greens can be a little bit of an adjustment just because they're both pretty firm and pretty slow. But he seemed like he was putting the ball really, really well, which normally if you're looking for a relative weakness in his game compared to just how strong it is everywhere else, sometimes the putter is where he's at least a mere mortal.
And some of that is he normally hits so many greens than he did in regulation that his putting totals are going to be high because you just don't make putts unless you hit it close. And Scotty has a unique talent to hit it close. I think Scotty is probably the best player, including Tiger, that I can recall, who just stiffed it so many times at various rounds over the course of his career. So, you know, I don't know what his total number of putts are. They probably were reasonably high. But I agree with you. I thought he putted well. And when he putts well, he's really, really dangerous.
Let's talk about Rory McIlroy, the local kid who shot 9 shots better than his opening round 79 the last time the championship was at Royal Portrush in 2019. He had a couple of nervy moments off the tee early on. I imagine there were at least one or two thoughts clattering around in the back of his brain and a few others about the disaster that took place for him in that first round in 2019. But 3 shots off the lead, he hit only 2 fairways, for whatever that's worth. He has to feel like he's in pretty good shape and at least breathe a sigh of relief having gotten through 18 holes unscathed.
And you mentioned the start. He did, you know, he didn't take an 8 on his first hole. Yeah. He did bogey the first hole, and that sets a negative tone. But then he played really solid golf through 10, and he got to 3 under through 10. And then he got a little sloppy off the tee, and he bogeyed 3 of the next 4 holes. And he was headed the wrong direction. And then he settled down and made a couple of pars, and he birdied 17. And that birdie at 17, I think, is extremely important because it put him in a very positive frame of mind. He admitted afterwards that he realized he had bogeyed 3 or 4 holes and that something had to change because he was headed the wrong direction. And he righted the ship and got it in at 1 under. And if you had told him before the round you could have 1 under your first round, he probably would have taken it. The other thing, you know, going back to this round today, as I said, they had bad weather for part of the morning wave. And the afternoon, the weather was almost perfect. And I think McGinley said on the telecast, well, somebody's going to blow by that 4 under. That's not going to hold up this afternoon. Nobody did. You know, Harris English got to 5 under and then bogeyed to slip back to 4. In really good playing conditions, nobody made a positive move at the top of the leaderboard in the afternoon. And I'll tell you one other thing, and I can't explain this at all. Out of the 31 players in red numbers, 4 of them would be considered very senior golfers. Mickelson at 1 under, Justin Leonard at 1 under, Lee Westwood at 1 under, Sergio Garcia at 1 under, and I'd even throw in Zach Johnson at 1 under, make it 5. Why are guys at that age able to play a championship like this effectively on the first day? And the only thing I can suggest is they all have major championship experience. 3 of them have major championships. I think once you learn to play in that game, you hold on to that for a long time.
That's a really good point and interesting, especially with some of those older guys in the back part of their careers. Let's talk about a few of the high-profile Americans who did not fare so well. I'm going to skip over some of the guys like the Patrick Reeds and Brooks Koepkas who have kind of dropped off for a while now for a variety of reasons. But I'm zeroing in on 3 guys. Jordan Spieth, who didn't play badly, but still 2 over par. Colin Morikawa, a lot of people felt good about him coming into this weekend. Just 4 over par for him. He's tied for 114th. And Bryson DeChambeau, it just never got going in the right direction. He shot 7 over par, and he's among the bottom 15 golfers after one round.
Well, let's take those in reverse order. In the case of DeChambeau, and I have turned 100% in favor of Bryson. I love the stuff that he does on YouTube. I like the idea that he's become more mature and more of a traditionalist in his approach to the game. But you know what Bryson doesn't do? Bryson doesn't win. Bryson gets headlines. Bryson contends. Bryson doesn't win. If you take away, and it's unfair to say that, but if you take away his win at Pinehurst, and I consider that more of a McIlroy loss than a DeChambeau win. Bryson has 2 wins anywhere in golf, LIV or elsewhere. He won more tournaments. He won 5 tournaments before he became the new Bryson than he's won since that time. He needs to figure out a way to win. And I suspect it's that as long as he is and as imaginative as he is, that he really needs to find a way to score better. If you recall, Dustin Johnson wowed the world with his length for a long, long time, and he never won championships when it mattered. And it was always because he couldn't handle the wedge. Bryson plays a wedge that is the same length as his six iron. You know, all his clubs are the same length. I don't think that standard length wedge is something, or that non-standard length wedge is something that he should not consider changing, because it is a scoring club. Second one, who was our second one? Spieth. Jordan rallied on the back nine. He shot 40 on the front. He shot 33 on the back. And there were reports that he was still struggling with a little discomfort in the shoulder. But I like the 33 on the back. And I frankly root for Jordan. I find him entertaining. I think you could have, you know, they have their featured groups. I think they should have just Jordan with a mic and just run that all the way through the tournament with him talking to Michael Greller. And you'd have a great telecast. So I root for him, and I'm pleased that he fought his way back with that 33. Two over is, you know, that's what we have 69 players within five shots of the lead. Jordan is within six of the lead, so I won't throw him away as well. I cannot explain Morikawa other than to say everything I read from Morikawa, and I read all of Colin's interviews. He's got something in his mind that is blocking his confidence, and he frequently talks about he's just not quite right with where he is with his game. I expected him to be one of those dark horses who contended, and you know, four over, he's not going to win this championship. But other than that, he's an exceptional iron player. He's a very accurate driver, has had good moments putting. I don't understand why he has not been more of a factor.
Well, Dan, we appreciate your time so much and your analysis. I'm sure there will be more of it as the weekend goes on. At the very least, I would imagine you're going to be visiting with Tom on Sunday morning here on KMOX, and we will look forward to all of your analysis as we always do. And I agree with you to the extent that you might moonlight as a television producer. I agree with you that Jordan Spieth mic'd up for the whole round. That's an alternate cast that I would watch.
Nate, I've enjoyed the time with you. It's been a pleasure.
Dan Reardon, KMOX Golf Analyst, with us here on Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll take a break, turn our attention to Mizzou football when we return on KMOX. Gray Bar Sports Open Line rolls on to this Thursday evening. Nate Gatter in for Matt Pauly. He'll be back tomorrow when the Cardinals resume their season against Arizona. 8:40 Central Time first pitch. Network pregame 7:45, but we'll have 2 hours and 45 minutes of sports and Cardinals talk here on KMOX before we even get to the pregame. Redbird Rush Hour at 5. Gray Bar Sports Open Line tomorrow at 6. Network pregame at 7:45. Matt Pauly will be with you for all of it. Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas also along for Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow at 5. By the way, we are with you until 8 o'clock, Sports Open Line this evening, and then Jen Cease will be in with City Spotlight from 8 to 9, so you can get your fill of St. Louis City conversation. None of that tonight in Sports Open Line, but we did talk about it the last couple of evenings with City coming off that 2-1 win over Portland, and also the official signing of Falu Fall, new center back, young 21-year-old from Senegal by way of the Norwegian League. A lot of excitement around him, potentially some more additions as well to come for City that have been reported but are not yet official. Mizzou football conversation. We were planning to take some phone calls during this segment. You can always be part of the conversation by commenting on our streams on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, tweeting us at KMOX Sports. And the phone number is 314-436-7900. Not enough time because we're going to be visiting with Zach Sweet, Mizzou football beat writer for the Columbia Missourian, in just about 6 minutes. But on the back end of the show, after that segment, we're going to have one more segment at the very end. Call it 7:45, 7:50 or so, and we will take calls during that time, whether you want to talk Cardinals, Mizzou football, Open Championship, all the stuff we've talked about tonight, or anything else that might be on your mind. We'll take whatever is going down. Mizzou football conversation. The Tigers had their SEC Media Days appearances this morning. Eli Drinkwitz, the headliner, of course, the head coach at Missouri, and we will talk about all of that with Zach Sweet. Missouri will be opening its season in just under 6 weeks now. It'll be 5 weeks, 6 days, and 23 hours. A 6:30 kickoff on August the 28th. That's a Thursday night against Central Arkansas. They will open the season with six straight home games plus a bye mixed in on the first Saturday in October. Central Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, South Carolina, Massachusetts, Alabama. And they will not go on the road for the first time until Auburn at Jordan-Hare Stadium on October the 18th. Think about that. 6 weeks until the season opens, still 3 full months from now. July 18th is tomorrow. 3 months from tomorrow will be Missouri's first road game of the entire season. They'll play Vanderbilt on the road the following week, then a bye, then Texas A&M and Mississippi State at home, Oklahoma and Arkansas on the road to finish. We're going to ask Zach about this, and I'll take your calls on it. Vegas has Missouri's win total over-under at 7.5. I don't think even 8 wins, let alone 7, would make this fan base very happy with where expectations have gone. And Vegas, in fact, has the loaded value on the up end of the 7.5, meaning that they think 7 is more likely than 8. So to the extent that Vegas is making a choice, they're saying 7-5 is Missouri's most likely record. I'm not sure I see that. Right, Central Arkansas win. Kansas, obviously rivalry game, but you have to think of that as a game that Missouri expects to win with where the program is right now. Same story, Louisiana, not straightforward. Let's skip over some of the games that I think are more toss-ups. Let's call Massachusetts probably a win. That's 4. Let's say loss to Alabama at home. There's 1 loss. Let's say you lose to Texas A&M. The way I like to think of it is kind of games in buckets. So let's say Alabama and Texas A&M you lose. Although A&M is at home, I don't think that's an unwinnable game. Then South Carolina at home, Auburn, Vanderbilt on the road, Oklahoma on the road. What I would do is put those 4 games in a bucket and say you're probably losing 2 of them. I don't know which 2, but I think you're likely to beat Mississippi State, Arkansas, UMass, Louisiana, Kansas, and Central Arkansas. You're likely to lose to Alabama, and maybe you put Texas A&M in that category too, although it is at home, so maybe that gets you a little bit extra. And then you have Auburn, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma on the road, South Carolina at home. Probably losing a couple of those games, in my mind. Probably best case scenario would be 11-1 if everything went perfect, but to me, 8-4 probably feels the most realistic, that you take losses against Alabama and A&M, and then you put those other 4 games in a bucket. South Carolina at home, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma on the road. And you say 2-2 in those games, and that gets you to 8-4 overall. That feels probably about right to me. I think probably 9 wins would be the realistic best case scenario, and 11-1 would be the absolute everything goes perfectly season, and you find your way probably into the playoff, almost certainly into the playoff. Would you be happy with 8-4? Or do you think I'm totally wrong and 7 or 8 wins is actually not the realistic spot and they should be at 9 wins or more minimum? We'll talk about that with Zach Sweet, and we'll take your calls later on in the show as well as we get into our final half hour of Graybar Sports Open Line. More Mizzou football conversation after this. Mizzou football conversation continues. Nate Gatter with you in for Matt Pauly, Graybar Sports Open Line this evening. And we are joined by Zach Sweet, Missouri football beat writer for the Columbia Missourian. You can follow him on Twitter at ByZachSweet. That's ByZachSweet on Twitter. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing, Nate?
I am doing all right. SEC Media Days this morning. Eli Drinkwitz always entertaining at the podium. What did you take away the most from his comments?
Man, Drink is always a treat when he goes up to that podium. I mean, outside of his comedy to start off, I really took away the most his thoughts on the SEC expanding its schedule from 8 to 9 games, and also the expansion of the college football playoff. Of course, I'm sure everyone now on Twitter has seen that quote going around about the 30-team expansion, which is obviously ridiculous. But I thought that comment was definitely the most interesting thing he said.
How do you think he feels in that sort of ongoing debate? Is there a divide, do you think, among SEC coaches on playing an 8-game schedule in the conference as opposed to 9?
It's really tough to tell, honestly, because all the SEC coaches, I mean, not all the SEC coaches are as open as Drink is, as we Missouri faithful know. Drake is very open with everything he says, and he's not afraid to hold back, and he wants his voice heard. But not all SEC coaches are like that. So I think there's definitely a divide, but it's hard to know who stands where. A lot of the coaches – so I was up there in Atlanta the last 2 days. A lot of the coaches continued to talk about backing the SEC, and obviously Sankey and this whole thing is pretty set on that 12-team playoff. So – that 12-team playoff right now, and not wanting to expand to a 9th conference game, and the Big Ten and SEC seem to be at a bit of a standstill. So Drake's comments were certainly eye-opening, though.
So let's go through some of these position situations for Missouri. Let's start at quarterback, obviously the most important position on the field. Assuming that Sam Horn passes on this opportunity to sign with the Dodgers, who drafted him as a pitcher in the 18th round, it's going to be this quarterback room of the transfer Bo Prabula, who Missouri paid a lot of money to get to Columbia, Sam Horn, who has, we think, still a high ceiling as a passer, but has really never been healthy enough to get his opportunity, and then the freshman Matt Zollers, who people are excited about, but obviously he's in his first campaign in college. Do you feel at this stage it's safe to label Prabula essentially the presumed starter unless he loses the job in camp, or do you think Eli Drinkwitz and the Missouri Brain Trust would rather treat it as an open job for the time being and force somebody to go win it?
Now, that's a great question. And I am a strong believer that this is a very open competition right now. I think that both quarterbacks have a legitimate chance at being the starter on day one. I think someone's going to go and earn it in fall camp. And between Horn and Prabula, well, we know what both are capable of, and both have similar skill sets. Both are very mobile. They're both going to get you outside the pocket. They're going to make plays with their feet. But we don't really know the full potential of either of them. Prabula has only thrown 50 balls off college, and Horn, of course, as you mentioned, he's recovering from Tommy John surgery, so we don't really know what the arm looks like. But Eli Drinkwitz, what I will say, has been adamant that this is very much an open competition right now, and someone's going to go win it in camp.
What's probably not an open competition is the running back position, where Ahmad Hardy was one of the most sought-after transfers, certainly at running back and maybe on the offensive side of the ball, period, around the country, coming in from Louisiana Monroe. I've seen different sources peg him as preseason, potentially as high as first-team preseason All-SEC, certainly in that preseason All-SEC mix. How does that running back room look behind him? And maybe more importantly, just how high are the expectations locally around what Hardy might be able to do?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually wrote an article about this about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but Ahmad Hardy fits perfectly for what Mizzou does schematically with outside zone and attacking the edge and getting upfield, and the way Hardy cuts and everything he did last year at ULM looks really, really impressive. So Hardy is definitely going to be your workhorse, but I'd expect to see a lot of Jamal Roberts on third downs and passing situations, because he is an incredible blocker. And we saw that last year. He picked up some major blocks late in games. And ultimately, I think Roberts is the better blocking back of the two. Of course, Hardy's going to get the bulk of the carries, but definitely expect to see Roberts. And then Drinkwitz has been praising Marquise Davis, who's a freshman they got from Kentucky. He's also has a ton of potential and a ton of room to develop as a player. And I think learning behind Roberts is blocking, and of course Hardy's upfield cutting and lateral movements is going to be key for his development. So I like that you brought up what's going on behind Hardy, because everyone's talking about Hardy, of course.
Zach Sweet is with us, the Mizzou football beat writer for the Columbia, Missouri, and you can follow him on Twitter at @ByZachSweet. So let's go to some other position groups then. Are there any where you think things are still just truly up for grabs? Where are the biggest question marks position group-wise in this Missouri roster right now?
So I actually asked Drink about this today, because I mean, he said it himself. He said it's the biggest question mark. I had it written down that it was the biggest question mark. But the offensive line, you lose three starters in the SEC, and it's a huge uncertainty. So Connor Tolleson, who we talked to at SEC Media Days today, did confirm that he'll be back by week one, which is a massive development, because they really need his leadership and experience losing three guys. And at left guard, it's definitely going to be Caden Green. He's getting looked at as a national, as a NFL draft pick, first round draft pick, potentially, if he can take a leap this year. But he's only given up one sack all of college. So Caden Green is going to be your guy there. But what the other three spots is where it gets interesting. Drinkwitz has talked a lot about the leadership that Dominic Giudice has brought in. Dominic Giudice, of course, a Michigan transfer. Drinkwitz actually confirmed to me today that Giudice is going to be playing right guard. He moved him to right guard at the end of spring ball, and he really liked what he saw there. So Giudice is looking like the right guard. Deegan Trost, the grad transfer from Wake Forest, he's going to slot in at right tackle in all likelihood. And then Drinkwitz talked about how the left tackle is up in there. They went out and got a transfer, Johnny Williams from West Virginia, who's a redshirt sophomore. He's got a ton of potential. Javen Richardson, who's a JUCO transfer, redshirt junior, he could slot in there. Logan Reichert has been with the program for a number of years. Drinkwitz also talked about the development of Curtis Piegler, who's a redshirt junior, and Jalen Early as well. So no, there's no really telling what that left tackle spot is going to look like. But in general, the line is definitely going to look different this year, and I think it's certainly the biggest question mark. I mean, Hardy's only as good as that line.
All right, Zach, you know where this interview is ultimately going to culminate. It's that time of year where we put people on the spot, and I suppose the media polling in the preseason already gave you a warm-up on this, so at least you're not having to come into it cold. But we were going through the schedule in the segment before this. We were looking at the Vegas line, which has Mizzou over-under at 7.5 wins total for the year, with a higher likelihood on the low end than on the high end. So I suppose they're picking 7-5 as the most likely record out in the desert. What do you have your eye on? Let's say, first of all, what do you think is the minimum number of wins that the fan base could live with without feeling like this was a disappointing step back? And then where do you think they're most likely to end up?
I mean, that's a difficult question, but certainly I think that the floor for this team, given the schedule, I'm sure you guys were just talking about it, but they open with 6 straight home games. And then the road games are at Auburn, at Vandy, at Oklahoma, at Arkansas. You're not going to the likes of Bama, Georgia, Texas. I really think that this fan base is expecting another double-digit win season, which to me personally seems a bit high. I'm not going to lie. I think that this team likely slots in around 8 or 9 wins right now. There's a ton of uncertainty, but that schedule, man, it's really light compared to some of the other SEC gauntlets that are played this year.
It's a really good point. A lot of unknowns still to come. Obviously, a lot will center on Bo Prabula, as you mentioned, the offensive line. We didn't even talk about the defense, so that'll be for a future visit. Zach, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to you helping to answer some of those questions between now and Missouri's opener 6 weeks from tonight.
Yeah, man, I'm happy to come back on whenever. Just let me know.
Zach Sweet, Mizzou football beat writer for the Columbia, Missouri, and you can follow him on Twitter at @ByZachSweet. We'll take a break. If you've got calls on Mizzou football, on the Cardinals, on anything else you want to talk about, the number is 314-436-7900. You can also hit the comments section wherever you're watching the stream, if you are, across our streaming options on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. You can tweet us at KMOX Sports. And I think, especially if we don't get a lot of you chiming in wanting to talk about anything else in particular, I think I saw Jen Cease might already be out there in the newsroom and could give us a little sneak peek as to what might be coming on City Spotlight this evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Wouldn't that be a good time? Graybar Sports Open Line. One more break. We'll wrap up the show coming up next on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Mizzou football, how many wins? Vegas says 7.5 is the over-under. Zach Sweet, who we just talked to, you can go back and hear that in podcast form when it's up and available on the free Odyssey app in just a few minutes. He says 8 or 9. I think if you pin me down, I think I'd say 8-4 in the regular season right now, and then you hope for a winnable bowl game, still get 9 wins. I don't think Mizzou fans would be very, very happy with that. But SEC Media Day is today. Fall camp cranking up. It's really the unofficial start of football season in the SEC. It's the official start of football season this week across the NFL, with training camps getting underway. Good to have the feel of football in the air, even if temperatures are still routinely in the 90 degrees. And good to visit with Zach. And, you know, we try to, when the opportunity presents itself, to highlight folks who are in Mizzou's terrific student media programs, we try to do that. And there's a certain, I guess, I don't know the right word, a certain symbolism, that's not really the word that I'm looking for, a certain repetition in the fact that we had Ben Hochman, a Mizzou journalism alum, in the first hour, now holding things down here with the Post-Dispatch, and then Zach Sweet, who would have designs on doing something very similar then during the second hour. Don't forget, Matt Pauly will be back tomorrow for Redbird Rush Hour at 5 with Kevin and Bernie, then Graybar Sports Open Line and Network Pregame starting at 7:45 before the Cardinals resume their season. Second half gets underway against Arizona, 8:40 local first pitch for the Cardinals in Phoenix. All right, all of that is out of the way, and that means we get to talk now to Jen Cease about the city spotlight that's coming up this evening. Well, actually, hold on. We got one man on the line who would like to chat. So, oh no, Jen's mic is off again. Who is on the line? Richard is with us. Richard, you're on KMOX.
Yes. I'd like to know if you think the Cardinals could get either Ben Brown or Mitch Keller for Nolan Gorman.
I think it's going to be a tall task to get any controllable starting pitcher for somebody with the inconsistency of Nolan Gorman, especially Mitch Keller. We touched on his name very briefly during Redbird Rush Hour. And, you know, on top of that, you're dealing with the fact that I don't know that you're getting Mitch Keller for a Nolan Gorman level player anyway. Mitch Keller is within the division, and I think that's a big challenge. I mean, that's a guy, a 3.48 ERA, even though he has the 3-10 record. It's fun to watch the Keller and Skeens records that are so incongruent with their ERAs and how that has gone this season. But Keller, in particular, I think is going to be a challenge for the Cardinals compared to some other options on the starting pitching market because of his years of control and because of the fact that the trade would be within the division, and the Pirates probably do not love the idea of Mitch Keller pitching against them 2, 3, 4 times a year for the foreseeable future. And Nolan Gorman, I think, is a guy the Cardinals probably would rather not trade right now. I think if Nolan Gorman's going to be traded, that's more likely to be part of an offseason deal when they can really kind of think through it. Same story, I think, with Jordan Walker, that those are guys they're just unlikely to trade in the short term with a deadline deal just because of the ceiling that still exists for both of those guys. And we're seeing it more with Gorman, who, you know, since late May has been a really, really good hitter for the Cardinals and has gotten things moving in the right direction. So I would be surprised. I don't think a Gorman for Keller deal would be possible, but I would be surprised in general if Gorman is on the move during these next couple of weeks. It would be a little less shocking maybe if it happened in the regular season, just because there's the logjam element to keep in mind. I don't think almost anybody is untouchable on the Cardinals roster, not because they're not good players, but just because the Cardinals have a lot of guys for only so many spots, and they need to clear some of those out because you just don't need guys to be sitting on the bench or down at AAA. They're not giving you any value. And so, you know, that's why we've talked about somebody like Lars Nootbaar being a candidate, even though the Cardinals like him plenty and he's a perfectly good player. Nolan Gorman could be one of those candidates. Jordan Walker, maybe, though you're wary of trading a still young player who's probably close to the bottom that his value could possibly be. Even could Mason Winn potentially be a candidate to be traded in the offseason if Heim Bloom says, you know what, I like J.J. Weatherhold at shortstop. I don't want to move him to second base. I don't want to move him to center field. I want him to play short, and Mason Winn was not my guy, and I can go out and get something good for him. I don't think that's out of the question. You know, in general, this transition from John Mozeliak to Heim Bloom, combined with the type of roster the Cardinals have, with a lot of good players and not a lot of great ones, is going to lead me to think that probably nobody is off the table, that anybody would be a possibility for the Cardinals. All right, now Jen Cease is with us. Thank you for the call, Richard. We do appreciate you. I don't want to make it seem like you were holding up the show, but Jen Cease is ultimately the show, and so we have to spend these last 6 minutes on Jen before City Spotlight. Luckily, even though you got shorted a couple of minutes with her there, you're going to get her for a whole nother hour. Let's start there. What's on the docket? What's coming up on City Spotlight tonight?
First of all, I wanted to be sure I could. First of all, I wanted to be sure I could get on if I wasn't a Mizzou graduate. Lindenwood's allowed here, right?
Yes, there are rules.
Yeah, we are, Daniel.
Only because Daniel Hinkamp is producing this evening, we do allow one Lindenwood guest per show, but that is the maximum.
It'll be all right. It'll be all right. So, yeah, a lot going on. First of all, I miss you as my City Spotlight co-host. We
don't
had a lot of fun. We could do a whole segment just giving each other a bunch of, you know, nonsense.
Yes, I think we have done it. I think if we got Steve Moore on the phone, our boss, I think he would say that we've done many segments that way already.
Yes, we did. We sure did. But sometimes you can't get guests. But this hour, we do have guests. We're going to start off and talk City 2, their win, 9 wins straight, even though John Hackworth would tell you he doesn't like to use the word streak. They're on a streak and really good. We're going to talk with Charlie Bilyeu. He's a University City student journalist, so he'll join us first. And then Dale Schilly, of course, as always, to talk about the Portland win, game analyst on Y98, City Academy director. And I believe now City 2
interim
assistant.
City 2 assistant, so you can talk about that too.
He's
My
so
goodness,
busy.
Is he wearing a lot of hats or what?
He really is. And then another person who wears a hat typically is Tom Timmerman. He's going to join at the bottom of the hour to talk, you know, a little bit more about City transfer window. I saw him having a little side conversation with Lutz on Tuesday. Maybe he's got some information for us there he can share. He's a beat writer. He should have good info. And then we'll wrap it up with the City player profile that we have every Y98 pregame with Haziel Orozco. What a great young man.
Yes, and just announced today that he's, or reported today,
reported,
I guess, by Tom Bogert.
I've
it wasn't
been checking.
It wasn't announced and made official, but reported by Tom Bogert on Twitter today that Orozco officially has a first-team contract, which would not be a big surprise considering that interim manager David Critchley has talked glowingly about him.
Yeah, and I've got actually a quote from him just kind of talking from on Tuesday, and I think he said it again today at the press conference that, you know, he's not involved in those, but he has a good recommendation for Hazi, as they call him. So what a great young man. Great story of him coming from Real Salt Lake. And that was his first start and first appearance back at his home club. So great story.
Yeah, really, really fun and enjoyable to be to have you here and to get to be part of this a little bit again. We had Tom Timmerman on Tuesday.
Oh, Timmerman's been busy on KMOX.
Yes, he has been busy. And we were talking about the one so far confirmed transfer for St. Louis City recently. There have been, again, a couple of other reports, namely from Tom Bogert, on a couple of other names potentially coming in from Minnesota. But the confirmed name is Falu Fall, who strikes me as, since City kicked off, if we started time in March of 2023 or February of 2023, I guess it technically was, when the first team began play. So we didn't count the Berkeys and Klauses and Leuvens, who all signed before the first season began. I think he's probably the highest profile transfer they've had since then. Certainly the most expensive transfer they've had since then. We don't know the exact figure. Tom speculated probably $3 to $3.5 million.
I saw that floating around somewhere.
And a guy who is really young and really projectable. And so he feels like a different type of player than City have had so far, which is a guy who, if he has a couple of good years here and develops, they could be then selling back to Europe for double, triple, quadruple what they paid.
Yeah, and I really like, too, getting a player that, I know he's played in Norway, but, you know, from somewhere, different part of the world, different kind of background, different kind of skill set. I got a little once bitten, twice shy from Jean Da Silva. We haven't seen a lot come from that move. I was pretty excited about seeing more speed. Different position, I know, but I understand a Falu to be, Falu, I think is how you say it, right? Falu Fall to be something that I don't know that he can make you a really big immediate impact. We've seen it happen before, but not sure how fast he'd get in and make an impact on that back line. But definitely got strengths on the being a left footer. Doesn't hurt. I think he's 6'4".
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's a young guy. His market value has just exploded. I mean, this is a guy who Reims in France were almost giving away just a year ago, and he's completely transformed his entire early career with 1 year in the Norwegian League. And now here he comes to St. Louis with a chance to do even more. Jen, we appreciate you so much. We're looking forward to tuning in to City Spotlight this evening. Have a lot of fun.
I'll miss you, Gatter.
Yes, I will miss the show as well. Thank you so much to all of our other guests as well. Sam Dykstra from MLB Pipeline talked MLB Draft. Ben Hockman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch talking Cardinals. Dan Reardon, KMOX Golf Analyst. We discussed the first round of the Open Championship going into the second round, which will tee off in, about 5 hours, a little less than that now. Mizzou football. Also, Zach Sweet, who joined us to discuss the Tigers, and obviously Jen C's here in studio. She doesn't really count because she had to be here to host the show next hour, but we'll count her anyway. If you missed any of the show, you can go back and hear it in podcast form on the free Odyssey app. You can also listen to Gen City Spotlight live coming up in the next hour there on the Odyssey app. If you're in the St. Louis area, you can hear Cardinals baseball for free and everything else that we do here on KMOX. Matt Pauly will be back tomorrow for Redbird Rush Hour starting at 5, Graybar Sports Open Line at 6, Cardinals Network pregame 7:45, and the resumption of the second half of the season, the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks, 8:40 Central Time. For producer Daniel Hinkamp, Nate Gatter saying so long. Thanks so much for being with me tonight and this entire week filling in for Matt. Had a lot of fun. Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.